Good morning. This is Fran Michel here with Nick Caleb to talk about the critical energy infrastructure hub in Northwest Portland and about current efforts to address its dangers. Nick is an attorney with the Breach Collective focused on climate and energy. The Breach Collective supports community-powered climate justice and labor campaigns through legal advocacy and organizing, and Nick has been working on issues related to the CEI hub for years now, I think. Thank you for joining us on the Old Mole Variety Hour.
Great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Well, let's start with what is the Critical Energy Infrastructure or CEI hub for anyone who hasn't heard about it? What is it and why are people concerned about it?
So the CEI hub designation is for a 6 mile stretch of land in Northwest Portland that's along the Willamette River, where over 90% of the state's liquid fuel supply passes through at any given time. Some of that's stored there and some of it moves on to other locations. It's an area that used to be wetlands and lakes and was sort of filled in over time and industrialized over the last 100 years or so. And in the last 10 years, maybe even longer, actually, people have begun to understand with greater and greater detail that it poses a very serious risk. If an earthquake hits, especially a large earthquake like the Cascadia event that we're all expecting and are overdue for, because it's all on fill soil, so it's really unstable. And then a lot of the tanks are really old, so they would fail. And the combination of those things and the proximity to the river and a forest park makes it, a perfect storm of a horrible, horrible natural disaster that some people say would be one of the worst in the history of this country. And so yeah, that's what it is. And so it supplies fuel, it's an industrial hub, it's got an economic purpose, and then it's also a ticking time bomb in a terrible place to put fuel.
Yeah, Forest Park can go up, it'll damage the river, it'll damage the whole city, and given that the tanks are also quite old, even before the expected earthquake, there are a lot of hazards there in terms of possible fires, lightning strikes, train derailments, all sorts of things that could be really disastrous there.
Yes, exactly.
Well, these are longstanding issues. I mean, as you say, this people have been aware of it for some time. The city passed a moratorium on new fossil fuel infrastructure almost 10 years ago. There's been some effort in response, I guess, to that, to the public concerns around that, to move toward renewable fuels as an alternative. I mean, the moratorium was on new fossil fuel infrastructure, so renewable fuels, I guess, doesn't count under that heading. There are some pending changes also to the renewable fuel standards. Can you tell us a little about the role of renewable fuels and renewable fuel standards and how that fits into the CEI hub?
I'll give a caveat that I am not the preeminent expert on the details of all things renewable fuels, but I can give a pretty good outline of that class of materials and what they're supposed to do and kind of like what's the current state of that and some of the news that we've heard recently. So yeah, fossil fuels are pretty straightforward. They're fuels that are derived from basically carbon-based material that's plants that died a long time ago and then got buried under lots of stuff and then got dug back out and burned. So those are fossil fuels and they're linked to the climate crisis because when you burn them, they release carbon. And so people have been trying to transition off of this for a long time. And one of the pathways that's taken on prominence, I guess, in some places like Oregon, Washington, California, is this transition of biofuels, and now some classes of those biofuels are called renewable fuels. And the words basically denote what the stuff is that the fuels are made from. So it might be plant material, for example, or waste oil from cooking and things like that. And so they're different fuels that are not fossil fuels, and you can replace fossil fuels. And the argument is that they are better for the climate in some cases because they don't emit as much carbon as fossil fuels when you burn them. And other folks argue that they burn cleaner in engines. So, for example, renewable diesel is believed to burn cleaner in engines than normal petroleum diesel. And so there might be an air quality benefit as well. That's the positive case for that. And so in Oregon, going back a while now, there's been clean fuels program at the state. And I think in 2006, the city of Portland established a renewable fuels program. The city updated its renewable fuels program in 2022, which is for folks that follow this stuff closely. Also, the fall that the Zenith backroom deal happened, and Zenith, notorious oil company in Northwest Portland, basically rebranded itself as a renewable energy company and said they were going to replace petroleum diesel with renewable fuels. And so, not a coincidental policy move going on there. And the idea of that update is that they would phase out renewable and biofuels that have less beneficial carbon intensity and make them basically over time phase in more and more friendly to the climate fuels, until I think by 2020 they'd have, like, when you get diesel, it would be like a 99% biofuel blend with like a really good carbon intensity, so that we could be confident that what we're burning is better for the climate. That's the idea. So another part of that policy is that they appointed a technical advisory committee to make recommendations about that program. And it's basically, a majority of the folks on the board are fossil fuel companies. And they recently recommended that we delay phase-ins of both the, like, blend amounts of biofuels and renewable fuels, and also pause the carbon intensity pieces of that as well for another date. And so, for me, somebody who's watching this at the time, it's very foreseeable, of course. Like, if you put the fox in charge of the hen house, that's how they're going to behave. And so people are sounding the alarm and saying, there's a lot of skepticism about renewable fuels in general, whether they actually are better for the climate. And we can get into that later if you want to. But so people are already skeptical. And then this proposed delay is causing people to raise alarm bells. So we'll see what happens. I think, functionally speaking, the director of the Bureau of Planning Sustainability has the final choice. And people are putting pressure on him to not delay the implementation of the program. Yeah. And then the other thing I'll just say about renewable fuels that's relevant for this conversation is there's the, like, argument over whether they're good or better on carbon emissions. And then there's another argument, which is, are they safer than fossil fuels? And the answer to that second question is more clear: no, they're not. Like, if they fall into the river, if you light them on fire, if there's a disaster, they're equally dangerous to fossil fuels. So we don't really have a, if we just keep adding renewable fuels to the dangerous place, it keeps increasing the safety risk for Portlanders. And that's really clear.
So it may or may not be the case that it's not quite as bad for the environment, for the climate, but it's certainly still just as bad for the safety of the city and the region.
Yeah. And for folks who want to see a discussion of that, there was a February 27th, I think, hearing at the city's new Climate, Land Use, and Resilience Committee, where advocates who are critical of renewable fuels came in and presented information. And so you can find those videos easily online if you just, like, search for Climate, Land Use, and Resilience Committee, City of Portland. So February 27th. So I'd encourage folks to watch if you're really curious about those details.
So the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability is in charge of that, is in charge of updating policies and zoning code for what happens at the CEI hub. And they're in the process of doing that right now. I think there was a grant that the city received for addressing emergency preparedness, our lack of preparedness for coming emergencies. So they've been working on that, and they've released a draft plan with four alternative options. There's a chance for the public to weigh in on the process. Can you tell us about that updating of zoning policies and regulations and what those alternatives are?
Yeah, absolutely. And maybe I'll give a little bit of history to feed into this as well, so it makes sense in context. So, yeah, as you mentioned, back in 2016, the city passed this code called the Fossil Fuel Terminal Zoning Amendments. And basically, it said that, well, not basically, it said exactly that you can't build any more liquid fuel storage tanks that would have fossil fuels in them over 2 million gallons. And 2 million gallons, I think, if I remember correctly, was the amount of oil that would be in a 1 mile long unit cargo train, because we were really worried about oil trains coming through. So that's how that was calculated. So basically, no large scale fossil fuel infrastructure. And that was challenged in court by industry for many years and eventually upheld to be legal. So that's great. We have the zoning power to ban new large scale fossil fuel facilities. One of the things that was overlooked was what's called transloading. So that basically means to move fuel from one transportation medium to another, so from rail to ship, for example. And one of the reasons we have this problem with Zenith in Portland is because they purchased an asphalt terminal, turned it into a fossil fuel facility, didn't build any new tanks, but used the existing asphalt tanks for oil. And then they build these really high efficient rail unloading tracks so that they can basically move more fuels through without having to store it and build new storage tanks. So that's how they got their foothold in. So that was a oversight that, we should have probably fixed. And people started paying attention to this a lot in 2019. There was a lot of activity. The politics were really good in Portland to make those fixes and to get to the other parts of this issue that weren't solved with the fossil fuel terminal zoning amendments. And then the pandemic happened, and basically all hell broke loose. The climate movement was in tatters, like every movement was at that point. And our government became more reactionary and right wing. And so a lot of that momentum was lost. And then coming out of the lockdowns, the climate movement began to rebuild and, put pressure on the city. And now we have leadership that's a lot more friendly to the climate movement than we had even a year ago. So those conditions are better. In the meantime, we've added a lot of fuel storage to the hub, including the renewable fuels that you're talking about. So we still have this safety problem. It hasn't gotten any better. It's gotten worse, in my opinion. And
Because
the
there's
city.
much more moving through. I mean, Zenith has a lot more now than they did when this problem first came to light. The amount of fuel stored and moving through the CEI hub has only increased.
Yeah, it increased like 5 years in a row after Zenith told regulators that they would not increase the volume of fuel going through their facility. And so it's also KBOO's done an amazing job of covering this. So you can read through the archives and get the whole story of this. But yeah, long story short is that there's more fuel moving through there. And fun fact, the discussion draft from the city also has data that Zenith is now the largest fossil fuel facility at the CEI hub and has been since 2023. So
Wow.
even I didn't know that. I follow this really closely and I didn't realize that. So, so they have this basically under pressure from the public and a recognition that they have to do something about this site and a grant from FEMA that came under the past presidential administration. They began to, not as friendly now. They started to do community outreach and hear from, advocacy organizations, people that live near the hub, tribal groups, although there's some critique about the quality of tribal outreach that's happened. And then like other stakeholders, like the people that, move the fuel and other business interests that usually get the ear of planners and city councilors. And out of those meetings, they basically came up with these four alternatives that you're talking about. The first alternative is basically like keep the status quo, but restrict fossil fuel transloading. So it'd be like plugging the gap of the fossil fuel terminal zoning amendments, that loophole, but only for fossil fuels. And then there's an alternative that would basically allow only a certain amount of renewable fuels to grow in the hub. So basically close a gap on fossil fuels and then put a cap of some kind on how much the renewable and sustainable aviation fuel world can grow. So allow still more fuel. And the rationale of that is that the planners don't want to harm that market because they trust and buy into the carbon reduction claims that are being made there. Advocates, not so much, but the city does. And then the third would be to just put a cap on all fuel storage growth entirely. So just basically say, okay, whatever is here is now, we can never have more than what's there. So it'd be like just a cap where it is. And then the fourth, which is newer, and advocates actually didn't expect this, and it's a, I'd say, like a good surprise, is that they would cap fossil fuels, renewable fuels, and then they would also have like the cap would decline over time. And so I think they said that they'd have to reduce the amount of fuel stored in the hub by 17% by 2035, I think is what they proposed.
Doesn't sound like a whole lot of reduction, but it's
Yeah.
some, unlike the other three alternatives, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And that's how you responded is basically how people I work with closely at 350 and Columbia River Keeper and, Neighbors for Clean Air and Portland Harbor Communication and some folks that live near the hub said basically the same thing. It's like, well, that's good that they have a drawdown scenario in there, but that doesn't really seem aggressive enough for the type of risk that is there. So those are basically the four alternatives. And I kind of clued you into where a lot of the advocates are going to position themselves there. And now we'll submit comments and hopefully persuade the city staff to agree with us that that's the better option.
And what do you make of the lack of better alternatives being proposed of the four three of them don't involve drawdown at all, and the fourth is a very slight drawdown. Is the problem not listening to the voices of those concerned about the safety of the region? Or you mentioned not enough outreach to tribal communities, too much attention being paid to corporate lobbyists. How do you understand the nature of the alternatives being proposed?
Yeah, I now this is my read based on being in this space for a long time. And if you asked individuals, they might give you a different answer, but this is kind of my like political read on how this all mushes together and has a sensible narrative. But I think the planners at the city are, they understand that there's risk there. And I think they take it seriously. But they think their job is to balance a lot of different concerns. And one of those concerns is economic growth in the hub. And I think a lot of the senior planners are as or more concerned about the economic piece as they are about the safety piece. So I think that's basically how it is. And, you know, historically, when you watch who shows up to public hearings and meetings, like a lot of people in Portland who know about this are really motivated to reduce risk. And so a lot of like just human persons show up, lots of them, you know, en masse, many thousands, lots and lots over the years. And dozens of organizations have been asking strongly for change for a long time. And then when it comes to the folks that want to see the status quo preserved or even more aggressively allow for fuel to be stored there, it's always the same group. It's like the Western States Petroleum Association and Chevron and Zenith and McCall Oil and the Portland Business Alliance, which is our kind of like local chamber of commerce, right? It's like always the same people. And there's not as many of them as there are people, but still the way that the planners kind of weigh this is like, okay, well, those are equal interests. And then we try to figure that out. I don't think that's the way that the city council leans now. I believe pretty strongly that there's a clear majority of city councilors. They're split on a lot of issues, like right down the middle. But on this one, I think there's a clear majority of city councilors who want to see the hub get safer over time. And a lot of that is because of the efforts of groups like 350 PDX and the Breda River Collective and others who took candidates down to the hub and really like educated them during campaign season. So yeah, I would say there's some probably differences in political opinions here between the planners and the city council. And we'll kind of just like see how that plays out in the machinery of producing recommendations.
So there's been tremendous work being done by citizen activists, by local groups, by concerned residents of the area who have been researching and studying and campaigning around these issues for years and are concerned that we're not going to have much of an economy if the whole thing blows up. That would seem to be a priority for those groups and for people living here. And that's a message that needs to be drilled home even further for the administrators within city government who are
Yeah.
making these decisions also.
Yeah. And there's also, I mean, there are issues again, like the more favorable interpretations of city motivations is they also have limited amount of regulatory authority because they're a local government, right? So they'll have less authority than a state government, less authority than a federal government. So, you know, I think they also are worried about getting sued all the time. And so there's a lot of tension there that advocates try to help with by helping them see a world that we don't think is legally as risky as they do. And, you know, another caveat that's important to understand all this is as groups like Zenith are not growing for Portland. They want to be a regional hub for fuels. And so they basically are proposing that Portland take the risk of the stored fuels and the disasters and all the rest, and then other communities get the, you know, maybe benefits of these fuels. There's also big players in local politics like the Port of Portland. The Port of Portland and Zenith and Delta Airlines just announced they have a sustainable aviation fuel partnership. And sustainable aviation fuel is actually a fossil fuel under city code, but the city kind of made some exceptions for Zenith so that they could get permission to do that back in February. I think folks will remember that as well. So there are a lot of interests that have There are a lot of interests that have interests, right? They want to make money and they're putting pressure on people. Planners probably talk more to people at the port and at the business alliance and these industries than they do with the community. I think sometimes they're more comfortable with those types of folks because they all have like a linear look on things. It's just like very simple to be like, we just want to make money. And if you let us do this, we can make money. And then maybe some of that will come back in taxes or whatever, right? That's historically how these folks have worked. And the frames that we're offering are very reasonable, but also not things that planners necessarily think that they're supposed to do, which is stop world historic disaster from happening in downtown.
Well, for listeners who want to help stop world historic disasters from happening, can you tell us about how people can weigh in? There is a comment period that's open until the 17th of October.
Yeah, that's right. And so, I mean, what we're encouraging folks to do, and Breach Collective put out an action alert. It's up on our website. And also, we have some social media on Instagram and Blue Sky about it, is encouraging people to read the discussion draft and let the planners know that you don't think that the alternatives that either allow for growth or keep the status quo are responsive to what's needed, that we actually need to see a drawdown scenario. We actually have to take it seriously and start reducing that risk by reducing the amount of fuel that's stored there. The only thing that makes sense. We should have started doing it 10 years ago, probably before. That's bad that we didn't, but also the second best time to start doing that is now. So that's what we're encouraging folks to do. And yeah, you can do that on the action alert that we have. It gives instructions on how to write comments and who to send those to. There's basically two ways to do it. One is sending it to an email address, which I don't have in front of me. And then the second is on Portland Maps, which is a website the city operates. You can send it comments there as well.
And we have linked to that on our webpage for KBOO for this segment, so people can find that there and can also find the link on the City of Portland page about these issues. Thank you, Nick Caleb, for talking with us about the CEI Hub.
Yeah, we've got troops on the way and it's distracting and it's taking up a lot of energy. But if folks can find the time to submit some comments here during this craziness, it'll really help us get to that safer CEI hub and just safer community overall.
Because that earthquake is going to be much worse than what the federal government is bringing this
That's
week.
right.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
I heard somebody say if we called it the DEI Hub instead of CEI Hub, problem solved.
The Eastern world, it is exploding, violence flaring, bullets loading. You're old enough to kill, but not for voting. You don't believe in war, but what's that gun you're toting? And even the Jordan River has bodies floating, but you tell me.